Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, May 16th, 2015. This is episode 1187. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. My friend John C. Dvorak says, all you Apple Watch guys, you all have now a new salute where you put your fist up with your watch on. You show each other you're all in the Apple camp. Yeah, it's true. But I also do Android Wear. We'll talk smartwatches, smart anything. If it's got a chip in it, we'll talk about it. You know one of the smartest people I know? He's a doctor. Dr. Bob Heil. He's a ham. It's going on right now. Hamvention in beautiful Dayton, Ohio. And I thought we'd start the show as we do every year at this time by saluting amateur radio guys and gals all over the world. And let's start with Bob Heil because he's wearing a crazy shirt. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Leo, and greetings to everybody. We're in Dayton, Ohio, which is the focus of ham radio this weekend with people from all over the world. And I'm joined by some great people, our host for Ham Nation, our great show here on TWiT, is Gordon West. Yay. And Gordon, how are you today?
I am fine, Bob, and Leo, good to hear you and all of your audience. We're here at Dayton.
Yay.
Oh, it's a bunch of hams.
But a serious note of this, I'm joined by another doctor. This is Dr. Tamitha Scove. And Dr. Scove is a space weather person. Now, give us the real scary title.
Ooh, the scary title is Space Plasma Physics.
I love her space weather reports every week on Ham Nation. It's so much fun to see what's going on with solar flares and all that stuff. I love that stuff.
Yeah, the sun and I are tight. We're just really...
Well, we are so blessed to have her join us because what she brings to us is how we're going to communicate. And it's so important. And everybody else out there that has television or sometimes cell phones, the weather has a lot to do with how we interact, right?
Absolutely. Okay. Cell phones are one aspect, but of course, being at Hamvention, there's tons of ham radio operators, and I just look at everybody here, and all I see are a bunch of people who deal with space weather every single day.
and some of them don't know it or realize it, right?
Not yet, but we're going to change all
that. That's right. Well, for all of you that have not heard of Ham Nation, you want to tune in on Wednesday night, but you can go there anytime. Just come to the TWiT Network and look at our past programs, and you will see and hear Tamitha do a lot of her reports. But she had to come and join us here this weekend. We just had about 250 Ham Nation viewers in a forum that we hosted with her and all of the others. So we really appreciate you coming and spending your time. And you kind of squeezed it in before you're headed to the airport, right?
Yes, that's right.
Well, we thank you so much to be here. And we'll look forward to seeing you every Wednesday night on Ham Nation.
Yes.
And keep giving us those good reports where we can work further distances, right? Right?
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me on Ham Nation and on TWiT TV. I just can't thank you enough. And it's great to be able to get space weather out there to a much more vast audience than I ever would before.
Okay, Dr. Scove, thank you so much. She's going to head for the airport. And Gordon, you and I are going to be joined with our contest DX gal here in a minute, but what have you found at Ham Nation or at Hamvention this week? Have you had a lot of fun?
We have, and you know, there was a lot of training going on before Hamvention started for emergency responders. And you know, hams are the first on the air operators during disasters or local city and state emergencies. The hams have portable radio stations, which we've seen here, and they can set up in minutes to augment communications with public safety, police, and fire and EMS. The hams make it happen. So if you have a ham in your community, get to know that operator, because in a big emergency, that will be your best friend.
Yeah, the emergency equipment shown here this week has been amazing, and a lot of cool things are going on in that particular avenue of amateur radio. But the other side of it is some of us characters that like to work the long distances. And we have the queen of DX and contest is our great friend Valerie, who joins us on Ham Nation each Wednesday. How are you, Valerie?
Oh, I'm doing great. And yes, DXing and contesting is another aspect of the hobby that many people enjoy if you have a more competitive spirit and enjoy talking with people around the world. Or participating in contests, and they're like fun games for everybody.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we have a lot of fun working all of the people. We just had a big DXpedition. DX is kind of shortwave for the old CW operators, the Morse code. DX meant distance. And so when we talk about DX operations, we're talking about distance operations. We just had a big one that went to the island of Navassa.
Island of Navassa. It took 15 years to get a special use permit from the United States government, particularly the Fish and Wildlife Division. So these gentlemen who have a sense of adventure, they get to go to these deserted islands, take generators and radios and antennas, and operate the world from these islands all over the world.
And we do that just so we get a QSL card, Leo.
From an island in the middle of nowhere that no one lives on. We're talking with the hams at Hamvention, which is the annual big convention in Dayton, Ohio. All the hams gather. Bob Heil is the host, along with our good friend Gordon West, the host of our Ham Nation show, which I do on the podcast network, twit.tv/HN. Bob, how many amateur radio enthusiasts are there in the U.S.? Is it a big group?
Yes, and it's growing every day. We're right now, the FCC, the last count was 780,000 in America. And we don't know how many.
2.6 million in the world.
Right.
Wow.
1.3 million of which are Japan.
Japan has a big contingency. But we grow every day, and a lot of it is because of Ham Nation. We know the proof of emails and talking to everybody at these shows. We have over 1,000 people, Leo, that have gotten their license after watching the Twit Network, and you talk about it, and we get Gordo and Valerie and all of us on Ham Nation. It really makes me feel good that we can do that. And we're so blessed, we, the whole arena of amateur radio operators, that you give us the time here on the network to let everybody know how fascinating this hobby is. And we just had a family, a whole family, or hams. The little girl was, I think, 8, talking about how fun she had of talking to people around the world. How cool is that, Leo?
That's really awesome. You know, we're really glad to, as Gordon pointed out, to support hams, because in emergencies, things like Hurricane Katrina in Louisiana, it's the hams that are the last line of defense. They keep the communications open. And while you may think, oh, you know, amateur radio, how much fun could that be? It is a lot of fun. I'm a general myself, and I love it. W6TWT. I want to give you all a 7-3 from the tech guy. We've got a minute left if you want to say one more thing. Maybe ask the hams for their, because I think you have some hams in attendance. I'd like to get a bunch of cards here. If you could just get them all to say their call signs, then I could send them all calls, cards.
Okay, we can do that. But in closing, let me say, we wanted to have Mike with us. You know, every astronaut that goes up is a ham.
Oh.
And Mike, but he's doing a forum right now, but he couldn't be with us. He's upstairs. But we wanted to let everybody know that amateur radio is the secondary line of communications from all of the space shots.
Wow.
Think about that.
That's
a minute.
Cool.
Take ham radio up there in case something doesn't work. But yes, we will have everybody send W6TWT a QSL, a
okay,
contact.
Here we
card.
Go.
Okay. So again, thanks so much.
Thanks,
Gordo,
Bob.
Any closing
thanks, Gordo.
Thoughts?
We got no time. Say it goodbye because we're going. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time in Dayton. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. More to come right after this. No, please stay. Don't go. I'd appreciate it if you stuck around. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy, 888 Ask Leo. We're gonna answer questions now. 888-827-5536. It's always fun to talk to the hams. They're so crazy about their hobby, and it's a fun hobby. It really is. If you like, you know, electronics and analog electronics in particular, although there's a lot of digital nowadays in ham. Many of the hams are very internet savvy. In fact, the data packeting that hams did in the early days, GPRS, is what made it possible for the internet even to exist. They really created the idea of packets, which are critical technology on the internet. But we will dismiss the hams now. Thanks, by the way, to Wild Blue. They were using, I guess there's not a lot of bandwidth at Hamvention. I'm not sure what's going on, but they have in the last few years. They've done this three or four times now. They've always used Wild Blue's Exceed satellite. And boy, for Skype, that's an amazing, I have to say, it was a great picture, great audio via satellite. Maybe it's just hams are that way. Well, why would they use terrestrial lines when they could use satellite? Heather Hammond is here. She made her way despite the fact that the American Graffiti Days are going on in Petaluma, where we are in the small town of Northern California, town of Petaluma, where American Graffiti was filmed. Mm-hmm. And so every year, a bunch of old car fanatics pile up, and I mean that almost literally, downtown. And they drive. They'll be driving around all day. You know, they circle. Probably not great for the environment, but really, it's a tradition. They it's the cruise, right? What was it? They did that in American Graffiti.
Somebody
didn't
on
they?
Roller skates better bring us some milkshakes because that was harrowing.
It's hard to get in. There's not only is there no parking, but there's a lot of traffic, a lot of Thunderbirds out there, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I rode my Segway in. Talk about dorky.
That is the only time that seems like a good idea.
It's kind of fun. It's kind of takes me about 7 minutes to drive, 10 minutes to Segway. Mm-hmm. So it's not bad. You feel like you're taking your life in your hands.
Oh,
not merely from cars plowing into you, but from people saying, look at that dork and throwing stuff.
Oh, they throw rocks. I'm sorry.
It's happened.
But kind of today you were like, suck it.
I'm on a Segway. There is perhaps nothing more dorky. I had a totally nerdish moment last week. I was riding my Segway. I almost don't even want to say this.
Isn't every Leo Laporte moment a nerd moment?
I was riding my Segway when my Apple Watch rang.
Oh, my.
And I had my dog strapped to my chest. I have a smallish dog, so I had him in a baby Bjorn.
No,
I'm riding down the street, talking to my watch, steering my Segway. That you can't get more. I wish there'd been a cameraman there.
Yeah, maybe we can recreate the scene, the apex of nerdiness.
I don't think it gets more nerdy than that.
It's reached a pinnacle with you now.
It's kind of embarrassing, frankly, even to admit it. Heather, I should probably talk to somebody normal. One of our callers. Maybe get a little normalcy here.
Yeah, Chris has kind of a normal problem. He's on his way to buy a laptop right now. Can you help?
Oh, I can. Hi, Chris. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy.
Hey, thanks, Leo. Appreciate you taking my call.
You're shopping.
Yeah, I'm on the way from one Costco to another.
Okay.
I'm in need of a laptop. The only thing I really care about is, I guess we call it processing power, running multiple software programs at the same time, not multiple, but two or three.
What are the programs? How heavy duty are they?
Yeah, Microsoft Access.
Okay.
Which that's... seems to bog down with some of the queries that we try and
run. Yeah, if you got a big database, sure, that would happen.
Yeah. Google Earth, and then just a couple web browsers.
And is this for your business?
Yes.
Yeah, it does sound like, actually, believe it or not, browsers are pretty heavy duty. Google Earth, because it's a 3D rendering of the planet, is fairly heavy. And Access, if you've got a lot of data. Yeah, actually, you probably do need a fast system. I'd say more than anything, you need a lot of memory.
Okay.
Does the database local? Is it on the hard drive?
No, it's hosted on another, I apologize, I don't know too much of the tech terms, but it's hosted on another computer.
That's fine. Yeah, that's fine. And the reason I ask is how important disk speed would be. So if it were a local database, disk speed would be very important. But everything else you described really is about the internet, isn't it? So having a speedy internet connection, make sure you get a laptop that has Ethernet on it. That you would think that's standard, but a lot don't.
Okay.
And you want to get an i7, but you also want to get a lot of RAM. And I'd say with that configuration, you should probably be going for 16 gigabytes of RAM.
Here's,
I know.
Here's the dilemma I got.
Costco ain't going to have it is the dilemma.
Yeah. One's an i5 with 12 gigabytes of RAM.
All right.
The other one's an i7 with 8 gigabytes of RAM.
Do the i5. The only difference between i5 and i7, actually, there's some difference, but the biggest difference is the i7 does hyper-threading, which means one processor could do two tasks. But that's not as – I think multitasking is not so much important for you as raw speed. Clock speed of the processor and amount of RAM. So the i5 with 12 would be best. But remember, this is the issue you're going to have buying at Costco, is those are not going to be the latest, greatest, highest-end machines. That's not what Dell and HP and all these other companies sell it. The big box stores. They sell the mass appeal products.
Yeah.
And you're actually, frankly, a high-end, a pro user. So if you didn't have to go to Costco, I'd look at somebody selling pro machines.
Pro machines?
Well, there's a difference in consumer and pro. Okay. Pro's more expensive.
Yeah. How much?
Well, any pro machine is going to start at $1,000, $1,200 and up.
Okay, it's not too bad.
The machine I just described with i7, I think you should still get solid-state drives. And you're looking for a laptop or a desktop?
Laptop.
Yeah. So you want solid-state, you want 16 gigs of RAM, you'd like to get an i7. That's a $1,500 machine I just described.
Okay.
Not too bad. If you had the time, I'd say go to Dell, but it'll be a week or two.
Yeah, no, I need them by today.
Costco it is. Unless I'm looking, where are you calling from? You're Huntington Beach? I'm sorry, Laguna Hills. There should be, got to think there's some big, we used to have a great laptop sponsor in the L.A. area that sold only laptops. There's got to be a store with high-end in that neighborhood.
High-end laptop.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you need Windows because you're using Access, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what holds us to Windows. Kind of a follow-up, if you don't mind. These stupid touch screens. I hate the touch screen aspect, but almost all of them are Costco R, probably because of that consumer.
Yep.
You talked about. Is it okay to just get one and not use the touchscreen?
Absolutely. The way they design Windows, in fact, this is one of the confusing things about Windows 8, is it's really a desktop and a tablet operating system. It's two operating systems in one. The touch is, of course, for tablet. If you could find – kills me. Microsoft has so few retail outlets, but if you could find a Microsoft store, the Surface Pro 3 would be an excellent choice for you, too. But anyway, look and see what they have at Best Buy. There is a Microsoft store in Los Angeles. If you could take the time to drive down there, it might be worth your while. They have not just Microsoft Surface Pros, but they have other high-end stuff. They sell high-end stuff there.
Okay. Right. That Surface Pro is what you would...
I like the Surface Pro 3. I'd look at it, although you should know Surface Pro 4 is imminent. They'd probably wait till they ship Windows 10, right? It'll come out with Windows 10, and that's... anywhere from July to September. We know it's the summer. And there was one rumor it was in July, which I repeated last week. Now, after talking to my Windows experts, Paul Theron and Mary Jo Foley, they think, that was a mistake. It could be any time between now and September 20th, the end of summer. Hey, have fun shopping. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm gonna hold out on the Surface Pro 3, I think, but he needs one today. If you need one today, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the number for our last caller. A couple of things from the chat room. I didn't know this. There's a Microsoft store just down the road a bit in Mission Viejo. So I hope you're still listening to the radio, the great KFI down there. But that's the place to go if you got to have a laptop today and you want a high-end. The Microsoft store. Certainly look at the Surface Pro 3, but they have other models. And somebody else told me, hey, there's also a Fry's right there, and it's a big Fry's anniversary sale, 30-cent hot dogs. So, get a hot dog. I'm not sure I'd get a computer there, but get a hot dog anyway. Scott Wilkins are here. Actually, the Fry's has everything. I mean, it's like, I wish we had a Fry's near here. They're a lot of fun, but you got to be a little careful because they sell refurb stuff that, to my understanding, is not always Don't get refurb from Fry's. Let's put it that way. Those are the big deals. Hey, that I love that Santa Claus laugh. Scott Wilkinson is our home theater guru. He's from avsforum.com. He also hosts a great podcast on the TwitNetcast network, the Home Theater Geeks podcast, twit.tv/HTG. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
You're going to a movie on, was it Wednesday? I'm so jealous.
Tuesday. I got a special invite for a pre-screening of Tomorrowland.
Ooh.
Which is, I'm looking forward to it. I think it could very well be a great movie. But what's really cool about this particular movie and this particular screening that I'm going to is that it is one of the five theaters around the country that currently or will have by that time a new projection system called Dolby Vision.
Is this the lasers?
It's the lasers.
I want it.
It's laser projectors co-developed with a company called Christie, which is one of the big companies in digital cinema projectors. And they have developed a new projector with lasers as the illumination source and something called high dynamic range, which I've talked about on the show a couple weeks ago, where the difference between the deepest black and the brightest white is quite a bit greater than it has been for a very long time. Every time I go out to the movies, the black level looks kind of grayish and kind of dim, and it just looks a little washed out. With this new high dynamic range, the images I've seen have been absolutely stunning, just amazing.
Is it better, just better contrast?
Yes.
We've seen high dynamic range pictures, stills, and that's not just higher contrast. That's you're seeing details you wouldn't see. You know, you look at a sunset and you could see the beach and the sun.
Correct. That's exactly what we're talking about.
And then that is what they're doing.
That is what they're doing. And Tomorrowland is the first movie ever to be released with high dynamic range information in it.
Was it shot that way?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
Now, but you won't see it unless you go to one of these special theaters.
Correct. Mm. And there are five around the country. More coming. The next movie to come out with this high dynamic range is called Inside Out. It's Pixar's next movie, which looks really good. That does look phenomenal. But by then, there will be four more theaters. And so Dolby is working very hard to roll these theaters out. I think in part, perhaps in large part, because they want to attract people to come back to the cinema. You know, because you can often get a better experience in a home theater than you can at a commercial cinema.
I actually can, yeah.
You can.
Yeah. I have to make my own popcorn. That's the only decision.
That's the only thing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But now they've got these theaters with recliners and food service to your seat and stuff like that. But what's really interesting to me, I mean, food service is not interesting to me because as I'm watching a movie, I don't want the waiter going in front of me going, oh, here you are, sir.
Right.
But this high dynamic range, that is really, really something. And all of these theaters, by the way, are also going to have Dolby Atmos sound. So the immersive sound, the more immersive picture, because as you have often said, you know, if the picture looked better, we wouldn't even need 3D because it looks more 3D. And this high dynamic range image looks a lot more 3D than anything we've seen before. So the movie opens on May 22nd. I'm going on the 19th, which is I'm very excited about that. I'm going to write about that. Jimmy H. in Kansas City was looking for this one of these theaters. There are four of them, five of them. One is the El Capitan in Hollywood, California, right across from the Chinese. One is in Burbank, the AMC Burbank 16 Theater. One in Kansas City, Missouri, the AMC Barry Woods 24. And the fifth one is in Houston, Texas, at the AMC Deerbrook. They're all AMC theaters, and they're all the prime theaters within the AMC multiplex, right?
Okay.
They all have one prime theater.
How much more does it cost to get in?
This is a good question. I don't know.
Oh, you want HDR? Well, that's going to cost you. It's a little harder to sell, though. I mean, I wonder if it'll cost more because unless they've come up, have they come up with a clever brand name?
Well, Dolby Cinema.
Yeah, that's not it. See, nobody's going to pay $12 for Dolby Cinema. If you said, super stereo, surround, upside down, pancake sound, that would be different. That would be different. But, you know, hey, it's lasers. People are going, yeah, okay, I'll just go next door to the other one then. Thank you.
Yeah, well, you know, you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't go.
See,
if you live near one of these places.
So you know, because in the ad, or they'd say the ad, like somebody, does anybody get a newspaper with movie ads in it? No. In the ad, if you could see one, it would say Dolby Cinema. That's the phrase you're looking for. So when you go to the theater, if it says Dolby Cinema, under the, you know, in the listings, that's the one you want.
It's basically going to be called Dolby Cinema at AMC Prime. That's going to be sort of the full name. I know.
I'll pay $12.50. Right.
Well, this guy Jim asked about, you know, hey, I went and I looked at the Barrywoods 24 website and it didn't really say anything.
Right.
But I went there just now, and in the opening carousel at the top of the homepage, it does in fact say Dolby Cinema coming to AMC Prime. So it is going to be there, and if you live near one of these theaters, you know, I posted the list on AVS Forum, so and I think it's still on the homepage, so you just have to go there and scroll down to the laser-illuminated projectors around the world, and there it will be. There's the Barrywood.
Yeah, I'm looking at the website, and for those of you who are watching video, which is zero, you can – well, it's a radio show.
It is a radio show.
Pointing it out is nice, but it does say it on the website. But I think I wonder, like, people – whoa, Dolby Cinema at AMC Prime. What does that even mean? Only people who listen to the show know that means anything. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it means something very significant, in my opinion.
Well, that's the funny thing. If you say 3D, people get it.
Right.
But really, but Atmos sound, I don't know if people know what that is, and I certainly don't think they know what Dolby Cinema means. We got to get the word out.
High dynamic range. Well, that's what I'm trying to do on AVS Forum, certainly.
Okay.
So go there, check it out, because I'm going to be writing about the screening.
I look forward to seeing it tomorrow. Do you think it's going to be a good movie? Oh, who cares? It's not about the movie.
Well, I think it is going to be. I'm hopeful that it's going to be a good movie. I'm sure that the new Pixar movie is going to be great.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, that looks
all
really
good. All the voices in your head.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Obviously, when Pixar does it, they're doing it in a computer, so they can generate whatever 3D, whatever they want. But how do they shoot Tomorrowland? What is the native?
Well, I believe it was shot on Sony F55 and F65 digital cinema cameras, which have a very high dynamic range capture capability.
Interesting.
It's like 14, 15 stops of capture capability.
And those are 4K cameras or 5K?
Those are 4K cameras. They're 4K something.
4K.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're 4K cameras. So we assume.
And they're digital. They're not, this is not, we're talking, not talking film.
Nope.
Digital.
Nope. Absolutely. Completely digital. And so what has had to happen in the past is they've had to, once they've shot it, they put it together, they had to reduce the dynamic range to be able to fit into the presentation format that all theaters have. Now we're seeing a sea change in that. And I think that. Once people see it, I can talk about it till I'm blue in the face, but until people see it, when they see it, they're going to go, wow. It's really quite amazing.
Scott Wilkinson, avsforum.com and twit.tv/HTG. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. That's the number. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. We got Skype. Well, you don't Skype us. You Skype the phone number. You need to have Skype out, I guess. 888-827-5536. Website, techguylabs.com. Moving on to Lyle in San Diego. Hello, Lyle.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome to the show.
I don't know if my problem's a real problem or just I'm annoyed when things don't work right, but I have an iPhone 5S.
Yes.
And sometimes my friends just write to me and go, what's up with your phone?
Oh.
And then they show me what the text message is. Sometimes it'll be an iMessage, like it's to other iPhones. And sometimes it'll show, like my friend sent me a screenshot. One was my name, which is my phone number. And the other said my name at iCloud or whatever. So it's like my phone is randomly picking between iMessage and texting, which is, like I said, it's not a huge problem, but when I look at my phone and see sometimes the blue bubble and the green bubble.
Yeah. You know, I have mixed feelings of this. If you and all your friends are iPhone users, then messages, Apple's special messaging program is awesome because it allows you to send audio, for one thing, very quickly and easily to them. So you've seen the ads with Jimmy Fallon and Justin Timberlake, where they show how easy that is to, you know, there's things you can't spell or that the dictation wouldn't get right, but you can just send the audio and then people can understand it. So that's nice. But Apple, in its infinite wisdom, made it iOS only. So, or actually Apple only, because it does work on the Macintosh as well. So if you have friends with Android phones or any or Windows phones or Blackberries, or if you have friends on PCs, they won't be able to see these messages. And so then in that case, Apple supposedly will use SMS, the standard system, to send it to them. And that's the blue versus the green. Green is messages that, you know, your iPhone to iPhone. Blue means, oh, this poor person. And apparently, I'm told, in schools and stuff, you're judged if you're a bluey. Like,
I think, isn't it backwards? I think,
or is it the other way? See, I don't even pay attention.
iMessage is blue.
Thank
I like
you.
Blue.
It should be. Yeah, right. I don't like greenies. See, you're right. It. Yeah. Well, I don't know.
But part of the problem is that it seems that I'm sometimes missing messages because, like, the same friend who said, "What's up with your phone?" said, "Oh, did you get this group message?"
And you didn't get it.
And I didn't get it. And last night I tried to send a group message, excuse me, to people who I know have iPhones. And it wouldn't send both of them, so then I singularly sent to each of them, and it went through. So it's just, I don't know if it's just time for the phone upgrade, or I've tried shutting it off, you know, all the
It could be, the problem is this could be so many things, because it could be the carrier too, right? If they're on the different carrier, sometimes it doesn't cross the carrier barrier. But on the other hand, it could also be that Apple doesn't understand cloud services. They don't. And so often their cloud services don't work as well as they ought to.
Okay. I recently had some cloud crazy stuff where I bought a new computer, signed in on the wrong thing, and started accounts. I called Apple. They claim you've got to have another account. It's just a thing. I heard you talk about with your son. Confusion.
I was getting his messages, and oh my gosh. So a lot of people end up using WhatsApp.
Yeah.
You know, the problem is it's the same problem as you have with messages. You've got to get everybody to be using WhatsApp.
Right.
So, you know, this is not unusual. This is kind of, but there is a standard called SMS that works everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more limited. It doesn't do as much as Apple's messages does. And so, you know, the key on, I think, Apple's messaging is there is a setting in your contact. If you're, so you might want to look at your contacts and make sure that everybody who has an iPhone is marked as an iPhone.
Okay.
That's one thing that will help you with that. I don't know where to come down on this. I feel like this is an example of Apple preferring a solution that is Apple only, because then they can, you know, control it, that sells more phones. You know, Google has a similar solution, Hangouts, which does many of the same things, including sending drawings and audio and animation and stuff, but it's cross-platform. So I just feel like Apple should really make more of an effort to make messages available on other platforms. But until they do, you want to make sure in your contact list you've marked people who have iPhones as iPhone users. That's really important.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, but the problem is you can't tell. No one can tell. Is it the carrier? Is it the cloud? Is it?
Right. I'm on AT&T. It was first with my Sprint friends, but then it started happening.
See?
And it's a new problem. It's always worked great. The reason I like iMessage is like you can see that it was at least delivered, or you can see.
Yeah. There's some real advantages to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, my wife and I have Apple Watches, and she's on Verizon, I'm on AT&T, and half the time she doesn't get my heartbeats. Man, there's a first world problem. So, oh, gee, Leo, that must be tough. But it's frustrating because I think that that's a cross-carrier barrier. That's some sort of weird interaction between AT&T and Verizon. So I'm not surprised to hear Sprint and AT&T having difficulty as well.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what the answer is, but do go in the context. Make sure all your iPhone friends are marked as iPhones. That way, they'll all be blue or whatever color.
Cool.
Blue, right? Blue for messages.
Yeah.
Green for the unwashed masses. Android users. Oh. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. It's. You want to also, Ang says in our chat room, and it's important. go in your settings and say, if they're not on messages, make sure it sends SMS. That shouldn't have to be in the settings. That's obvious to me, but apparently there is a setting for that. I mean, how else am I? I'm trying to send a message to somebody. They don't own an iPhone. What do you think? How should we contact them? Why is there a setting for that? Okay. Whatever. I just, Apple always feels to me like Apple is trying to lock us in. Doesn't it feel that way a little bit? I find that frustrating. You don't need to do that. Make a better product. Many think you do. So what are you worried about? Why are you working so hard? Eric in St. Louis, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Eric.
How you doing? I got a question for you. My sister, she's a special needs, and she bought one of those Fitbit watches, wristbands.
Yeah.
And, well, she doesn't have internet access where she lives. And now it's kind of it cut off on her, so she can't sync with it. And I was just wondering if you knew how that Fitbit worked, because I did a lot of research on it, and I can't figure it out if she's got to have internet access all the time.
No, she does not. Is it a Fitbit Flex? Which one is it?
I'm not sure. I think she bought it at Best Buy for, I don't know, over $100 or something like that.
Yeah, the most recent is Fitbit Flex, and it will sync via Bluetooth with a phone and via Wi-Fi with a computer. She probably doesn't have Wi-Fi if she doesn't have internet.
Well, she's got an Android smartphone, which she can connect to the internet, but they limit her because, she's special needs. Yeah. So, they limit her on internet.
Is there Wi-Fi in the house?
No.
No.
The only way she can connect to Wi-Fi is, through the phone over the...
Yeah, so that's not Wi-Fi, and that's not going to work. The wireless syncing will use Bluetooth to her phone.
Right.
So what she wants to do is pair the Fitbit to her phone... Use the Fitbit app on her phone, and then the phone, because it does have internet access, will communicate with the servers. That's so she can use the app and keep track and so forth. But the Wi-Fi features will not work unless she's in a Wi-Fi area. So,
well, I think you're misunderstanding my question. That's the only way she can get to the internet is through her cell phone.
Right.
She doesn't have Wi-Fi.
The Fitbit doesn't go on the internet.
I was wondering, is this like, did she waste her money on this?
No.
Wrist.
No, the Fitbit doesn't need the internet. It communicates with the phone via Bluetooth, which your phone has. So make sure she pairs it to her phone, then uses the Fitbit app. And the Fitbit app will upload to the Fitbit servers if that's what she wants. But the Fitbit will work just fine communicating with her phone alone.
Okay, so she's got an account with Fitbit, but she doesn't...
The phone is what communicates with that account, right? So the Fitbit syncs to the phone syncs to the internet.
Right, but she doesn't... they cut the phone off. They turn her data usage off.
Oh, well, then she's out of luck.
The Fitbit will still work.
I understand now. The Fitbit will still work, and it'll communicate with the phone. She just won't be able to communicate to the Fitbit service. I don't think you have to use the Fitbit. I don't believe you have to. I will check on that one. The Fitbit should still work, even if she's not syncing with their servers, is what I'm saying. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let me check on that, though, because... Hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, talking computers, the internet, home theater, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. Anything with a chip in it. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Home site, homepage is techguylabs.com. That's where we put all the show notes. After the fact, audio and video from all the shows. So if you miss a show, you can catch it there. Techguylabs.com. You don't have to write anything down. Actually, James is... I think he's at work today. James DeRuvo, who's normally taking notes during the show, I think got called into work. So he'll get it tonight. Don't worry about it. It'll be there, just not right away. Again, 888-827-5536. We've been doing some Fitbit research because our last caller, I feel bad. Last caller's sister got a Fitbit. She has a smartphone with a Fitbit app, but internet access is disabled on the smartphone. And because she's special needs. And so apparently the Fitbit won't work without internet access. And I did go to the Fitbit site, and it says it syncs using Bluetooth, but it also needs internet access. One of our chatters did an experiment, and I'm not sure if he did this correctly or not, but he says the Fitbit would not sync if he didn't have internet connection. Now, but he says he put it in airplane mode. Of course, if you turn off Bluetooth, it won't sync either. So what you need is Bluetooth only and no internet access. But the question on my mind is, look, a Fitbit is basically a pedometer. It's a smart pedometer. It keeps track of your steps. Some of the Fitbits will also keep track of altitude, you know, climbs upstairs, which is good. And some of them, you can wear them while you sleep. It'll track your motion while you're sleeping and try to give you an idea of how well you slept. It's a simple device. And obviously, if you're going to keep track of all that stuff, it needs to communicate either to a website or to your phone. Your phone has a Fitbit app on it, and will show you, you know, it'll download the data from the bracelet and show you all the steps and tossing and turning, etc. It doesn't and shouldn't need internet access, period. And in fact, this raises kind of an ugly specter, because it's pretty clear that if it does require internet access, that's greed on the part of Fitbit. They want your information. They want your health information. They want you to create a Fitbit account. Maybe they're going to show you ads when you go to the website. Maybe they're going to sell that information to somebody else. I don't know, but that's the point. Is they've made a requirement that's for their benefit, not yours. And this is something, if you listen to the show over a period of time, happens a lot in technology. Apple's another example. We were talking about messages, and it requires you have an Apple device. Well, that's not a technical requirement. That's an Apple requirement. That's not for your benefit. That's for Apple's benefit. And we're in a muddy area at this point. Used to be,
in the good old days,
when a company made a product, the benefit they got from the product was selling it to you. That was the benefit. They got the benefit. They sold it to you. They got cash money for it. And they tried to design a product that would benefit you so you'd want it. But in the digital era, it's gotten muddy. It's gotten more complicated. There's, of course, a lot of free products. And if you have a free product, well, I think it's pretty obvious. Nobody's giving you something for free. You're not giving them money. You're giving them something else. You're giving them data. And the data is of value. Maybe not a lot of value. Facebook, it's estimated that each Facebook user is worth $4 or $5 a year. Not a lot to Facebook, but you multiply that times 1.5 billion users. Well, it gets to be some real dough. So there's that. But that's a free product. What about a product I buy? Shouldn't that be like the old days where I bought it and that was the benefit to the company and now it's mine and I can do whatever I want with it? And one of the things I don't want is for the company to continue to check up on me. That doesn't seem unreasonable. And yet, that's the age we live in. That's the whether it's Monsanto, which makes a corn that you can't use for seed. It's genetically modified, so you have to buy it every year. Or it's Apple, which sells a product that requires you to use other Apple product to use it. Or it's Fitbit, apparently, and I don't know, but we have to do some more research, that has a product that requires you send data back to Fitbit. I bought this Fitbit band. It should just do what it does. Why does a pedometer need to talk to the home office? It shouldn't. It doesn't. That's an artificial constraint Fitbit has laid on top of it. And, you know, you got to say, I'm sure it's in the fine print somewhere, but it's not exactly on the front of the box. Oh, by the way, you're giving us some money, but that doesn't pay for the product in whole. You also have to give us some data or we're not going to let you use it. You know, that'll be that'll be on the bill of sale. Costs $100 plus a lifetime of data supplied to Fitbit.com. That should be that's the bill of sale. But it isn't, is it? And unfortunately, I feel bad, but it sounds like your sister is going to have to return her Fitbit and just get a plain old pedometer until they start making pedometers that send information back to the home office. The other option, of course, would be she could go, I mean, if you and she don't mind, that her information about how she exercises is sent back to the home office. You could just go to a Wi-Fi access point every few days, and that should work too. Just, you know, go to a McDonald's. Seems kind of, it's the opposite of health, but work out, run to McDonald's and sit down and then upload and then run home again and try to avoid those delicious French fries. Every time they get me. Every time. Bob in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Leo. I have a problem with my download speed on my internet. I'm a DSL subscriber, have been for years, and I'm paying for 3 MIPS. I have 2 computers. One's a HP laptop with running Windows 7, and one's a Dell running Windows 8.1. The Dell 8.1 won't stay at the prescribed download speed. In other words, I'm paying for 3 MIPS.
Well, you're not paying for 3 MIPS. You're paying for up to 3 megabits per second.
Oh, I understand that. No, it never gets to 3 MIPS. Right now, I just did a speed test.
Nobody ever tells you the minimum. They only tell you the maximum.
Exactly. No, DSL explained that to me, and they're very good about that.
Yeah.
But right now, I just did a speed test. I'm 2.59 MIPS.
Hey, that's pretty good.
No, I understand. But in an hour or two or five or so, it'll go down to like 0.5 MIPS.
Yikes.
But my HP will always stay at the prescribed speed.
Oh, interesting. So it's just that computer.
Exactly. So my question to you is, any suggestions on what's wrong with this particular computer?
Here's an experiment that will help you get some information about this. If you reboot the computer, does it go back to the 2.59 megabits per second?
It does.
Ah! So it's
rebooted every time I used to keep.
Well, no, but what that means is there's a program running. We call the term for this is in one respect, is a memory leak. Sometimes programs use resources and don't release them. It sounds like there's something on this computer that, even though you don't see it, is using up bandwidth. And I'm not sure exactly, you know, rebooting does is starts over, right? It fixes the leak. But there's something running on the computer that's leaking in some way. And I'm not sure what it is. Are you running? Wow. So this is interesting. If both computers are on, does your HP slow down?
No. And the HP is across the room. The one that's giving me the problem is right next to the router and the mouse and all that stuff.
Boy, that's a puzzlement. I mean, it's not unusual to see performance degrade over time as you use a computer, and that is usually because of some software that's not written right. What browser are you using?
Well, I've got three browsers. I've got Chrome and Firefox. And
same results with all three?
Yes, exactly.
And you're using speed test or something like that to test it?
That's right.
Yeah. Boy, that's an interesting question. I have to take a break. I'm going to think about this. Maybe the chat room will help me. We'll think about it together. I'll put our collective heads together, see what we can come up with. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's Wi-Fi. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So we've been doing some collective group thinking over this speed issue. In a nutshell, fella has 2 Windows PCs. One is getting him, every time he tests it, 2.59 megabits per second download speed, which is his nominal download speed from DSL Extreme, and he's happy with that. But for some reason, his other Windows machine, over time, slows down. So when it's first turned on, 2.59 megabits per second, no problem. But it degrades as time goes by, over an hour or so. It gets down to 0.95 megabits per second. What's going on? One fellow in the chat room, I think, is a good suggestion, says open the activity monitor and look at TCP connections. See if something else is connecting to the internet. You know, if you have a cloud storage like a Carbonite or Dropbox, or if you have something else that's accessing the internet, that could be it. You might also want to check if you have security software running, in particular Norton, which can be problematic as it consumes memory and blocks more and more stuff. There's a speed test that I prefer. He was using speedtest.net, which is probably what everybody uses. But there are a couple of others that I would suggest. Now, it's going to be clogged right now because I've mentioned it already. DSLReports.com. So wait a few hours before you use it. But I think they do the best speed test I've ever used. And it's not Java or Flash. It's HTML5, so you'll need to use a modern browser. But it does an incredible job and gives you lots of additional information, things like buffer bloat, which is a little-known but common problem with poorly designed routers and can really impact your speed. He says rebooting fixes it, which is interesting. Sounds like there is some process running on that computer that's causing the problem, and I'm not sure what it is. So DSLReports.com, they have an excellent speed test. There are others you can try, and testmy.net is another one. It might be using other speed testers would work better. SiriusBit.com/netbalancer. I'd get a second opinion, in other words. And I would definitely try the DSL Reports speed test. That's excellent. In fact, they have a great article on buffer bloat written by one of the folks in the chat room. Archandra wrote a good article on DSL Reports about what buffer bloat is, what the symptoms are of it, and what you can do about it, which is essentially buy a better router. 8888 ask. Leah, we have brought DSL Reports down, of course. I always hesitate mentioning websites because then everybody goes there. And, you know, a million people hitting a website. Very few websites can handle that. Bob in San Diego. That was Bob. All right, so there's some solutions for you, Bob. Patrick in Sullivan, Illinois. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm sorry, Steve in Dana Point.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Steve.
We have an old BlackBerry cell phone that has a keypad that some of the keys aren't working, so we have to migrate to a new phone. Now,
Well, you've used that to death. That's awesome.
Well,
wore that sucker out.
Zero key doesn't work, so she can't make any calls with the zero key.
Yeah, time to get a new phone, I think.
So our concern is there are some old text messages on the phone that we want to save for a legal case. And so we don't want to do anything that's going to accidentally delete these text messages. So we don't know whether the messages are stored on the device or on the SIM card or both. And we don't know that if we could take the SIM card out and put it in a new phone, can it somehow delete the text messages?
So here's the deal. Sometimes you can store text messages on a SIM card or phone numbers, but the amount of memory on that SIM card is small.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not all stored there. In fact, usually by default, they're not stored there at all. And if you did store it on the SIM card, then I guess it'd be recoverable. Now, you say it's for legal purposes. I would just save that phone. And the reason I say so is a chain of custody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you copy it to somewhere else, well, frankly, all bets are off because then it's just a text file you can modify.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's on the phone, it's on the phone, and you can see it's on the phone. So your best bet is I'm no lawyer, but I would guess your best bet is to just put the phone somewhere safe because
mm-hmm.
that's your evidence right there. How you can save you certainly can save the text messages. Whether they'll be of any use in a legal case is another matter.
So if we save the phone, for instance, what if we want to activate a new phone and
you can take the SIM card out, that phone will still show those text messages.
So we can transfer the SIM card from the old phone to a new phone and it's not going to affect those text messages.
Well, I shouldn't say that so blithely, because some mm-hmm. phones won't, you know, you have no SIM card, they go, oh, I'm not going to work. Certainly, all the smartphones I've used work fine without a SIM card. They'll complain, mm-hmm. but all the text messages will be there and everything. You know, maybe because it's a BlackBerry, well, this is an interesting question. You certainly can use the BlackBerry software and back it up
mm-hmm.
and back up those text messages. And that may be, you know, you need to consult a lawyer about the chain of custody issue, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then there are companies that make these, somebody in the chat room, Jerry, is saying pleasantsolutions.com. But you can use also the BlackBerry software. You can, that's not a problem getting those text messages off. Whether they'll be then admissible in a case in the courts is another matter.
Yeah, we want to keep them on the phone, but
what I would do is get a new SIM for the new phone. You don't have to transfer the SIM over.
Now, what about if you have the old phone, do you still have to keep paying that monthly fee?
No. You're going to go to AT&T and say, I want a new phone. Mm-hmm. They'll give you a new phone, and they'll give you a new SIM card. They'll deactivate that old SIM card because the phone number is going to transfer over.
So if they deactivate the old SIM card, that won't affect
me? Well, that's a very good question, and given the stakes riding on this, I'm going to be judicious in my answer. In many cases, it will work, but I don't know with that old BlackBerry. It's very possible the BlackBerry say, oh, good, I'm deleting everything. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by the way, there's another party that has those text messages that actually would probably be more useful in court, and that's the carrier, AT&T.
Mm-hmm.
So you can also get it from them on a AT&T document.
And that'll contain the text.
And that'll have the text, the date, the time, the sending phone number, the receiving phone number. That would probably be, I would guess, more useful in court anyway than saying, Your Honor, here's a BlackBerry.
Okay. Yeah, so, I did talk to someone at AT&T yesterday.
See if they've saved it. Depends how old they are. They may not have them.
Right, and they said that
too old?
It might be too old.
Yeah. That's an interesting question. I don't want you to sue me now because I don't know for sure. But here's what you do. Take the SIM out of the phone.
Mm-hmm.
See if you can turn it on and look at the texts. If you can, you're golden.
Yeah. But what if we can't?
Then put the SIM right back in. Say, whoops. take a picture of the screen before you do that.
We did take screenshots.
All right. Well, there you go.
With a camera.
That's better than nothing.
Yeah, but.
Well, you got me. I most of the time, I mean, I've done this before with modern phones, more modern phones, and it's no problem at all. The phone continues to work. The text messages stay there. But I can't promise that because, well, I remember phones different. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So Jerry reminds us that, or tells us that PleasantSolutions.com actually has a page about the legal uses of this. Apparently this happens a lot. Here he is. He's coming in on that big old jet airliner. That's why they call him Johnny Jet, our travel guru. Joins us each and every week to help us travel better with technology. He's been on how many weeks were you gone? A long road trip.
3.5 weeks, 11 countries, 7 of them with my dad.
Nice. Oh, man, I hope my son wants to do that when I get to your dad's advanced age. He's 86, you said.
86.
And he is lucky to have a boy like Johnny Jet. I got to tell you, that's great.
He flew all by himself, both trips, no
nice.
Problem. And he's legally deaf almost.
That's great. So. You know, my mom is same age, roughly, and she's decided no more travel for her. And I said, Mom, come on. The world is out there waiting for you.
It's what keeps my dad going. And actually, yeah. Every birthday, I say, I'll take you wherever you want in the world.
Oh.
Usually, he picks Las Vegas.
Dad likes – Mr. Jet is a party animal, and I
he
like him.
He likes to roll the dice, man. He likes to drink.
I love it. So give us some stuff now that you're home.
Okay, so last week I was out in the ocean and I was going to call you, but the ship didn't work. I was on Viking ocean cruises, their new one.
Nice.
And I love the ship, but the problem was in the cabin they did not have a map with the GPS location, which some ships do. So
you mean like on the TV? You could watch the TV and know where you are.
Exactly, you know where you are. But they do have free Wi-Fi, although it doesn't work great.
Yeah,
and
free's nice.
Free's good.
If it's not going to work, at least you're not paying for it.
I mean, it would work, but you just can't stream or anything
slow,
like that.
But that's all seagoing vessels is like that.
Exactly. Yeah. So I started looking for websites that will tell me exactly where we were because I wanted to get up, you know, be able to know when I should wake up and stuff. We were going to go to France at one point. So I found marinetraffic.com. Marinetraffic.com. So what this does, it will tell you basically any ship or vessel, port, marina in the world. So you can just type in whatever ship you're looking for. So I was on Viking Star and boom, it took me right to it. And you can, and there's all kinds of overlays so you can sort it. So you can take out the vessels or the cargo ships so it's not so crowded.
This is amazing. There are 71,876 ships live right now. That's amazing.
So you got to go up and you can type in, look for the ship that you're going to be on.
By name, how do you do it?
Yes, yeah, so actually up in the...
Let's do Viking. What was the name of it?
Up in the filters. Upper left is the filters.
Yeah. Which Viking, though? I can search
name. I was on Viking Star.
Let's see where the star is now.
That's the ocean, but you should be looking up your ship that you're going on.
Oh, no, because that's a river. It's not going too far. Oh, nice boat. And this will show where it is? Oh, there's even a timeline.
Should be in Bergen, Norway, since that's where they're being christened tomorrow.
Tomorrow they're getting christened. So let's see. We're going to show it on the live map. The Viking Star is in Bergen. Yep. That's a good thing because there's a champagne bottle with its name on it right now.
Yeah, it's a beautiful city, by the way, if you've never been to Bergen.
Bergen is gorgeous. I have been just by train, but boy, it's old fashioned. It's gorgeous.
So I actually took the Hurtigruten one time up all the way up the north, the coast.
So did we.
On Hurtigruten?
The Hurtigruten. Yeah, loved it. Lisa didn't like it much at all. Lisa hated the Hurtigruten.
It's a cargo ship.
It's great because we went from Kristiansund on the west coast all the way down to Bergen. What a wonderful trip that was. But Lisa, it was kind of tossed and turned, and it was a little,
Yeah.
I loved it. Well, don't say, when you see Lisa, when you see my wife, don't say, Hurtigruten. Hurtigruten. She'll go, I'll kill you. Slowly I turned.
Well, after Uniworld, she'll like to hear that.
Oh, well, that's why we're going on a river cruise this time, because it's stable, right? It doesn't...
Oh, my God, there is no rocking.
No.
No.
If there's rocking, it's honeymooners, not the river. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, the first night on the Viking was pretty rough, and I was coming off 2 weeks of river cruising.
Oh, yeah. See?
So.
Yeah, you get spoiled.
That's the best part about river cruising. Yeah, you do not get sick.
Good.
But all right, so I got an app for you, too.
I love this, though. MarineTraffic.com. And there's a paid version if you want to know more, and that might be worth it because this is cool.
It is all right, cool.
What's your app?
So my app is called Record 360.
Record 360. What does that do?
Not plural. Record 360.
One word.
So whenever you rent something, a house, a car, you know, we used to always tell people to take photos of it.
Right.
To make sure that there wasn't any damage, that, you know, you're not going to be liable. Well, this thing will not only it'll take video, you know, high quality, time stamped, and geotag.
Oh, this is like that legal thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, these are take this to court. That. Yeah. Wow.
So when you rent a car, you just download the app. It takes a minute. You sign up.
Yeah.
And then you just sit there and zoom across, and then you just mark any what is the word I'm looking for?
Dents,
you
mark dings, you mark
dent. Exactly.
Damage. Yeah. Neat. And is that free?
It's free. But it's only on iOS.
What a surprise. All right.
Why is that, by the way?
Well, I think it's more historic because now there's far more Android devices out than there are iOS devices. And the good news for Android developers is the amount of money that Android developers make has finally, for the first time ever, exceeded the amount of money iOS developers make. But for many, many a moon, it was iOS was the first and... You know, and I think it's partly because the folks at Record 360 probably use iPhones, and so they're going to make it for what they use. But you know, it's not always the case anymore. A lot of times, stuff comes out on Android first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Seems everything's on iOS.
It does, doesn't it? I carry both for that reason.
Right. I got my phone back, by the way.
Good.
I ran it over in Austria.
I know.
Feels good to have it back. I can now.
They replaced it. Yeah. So, were you using Periscope as you traveled?
No, you know, the one problem is that the Wi-Fi is too slow and to get the data plan is just a ridiculous amount of money. So I would do it once in a while, but on the ship, the Wi-Fi is way too slow for Periscope.
Right. Yeah. See, that's what I'm thinking is I'll just record videos and upload them when I get back or when I get to somewhere where there's some speed.
Right. But you can, you know, I would bike. I went on some biking trips, and then when we were at the cafes, a lot of them have free Wi-Fi, and that's strong enough to do it.
Right.
But, you know, you got to be careful with your data plan.
So, go ahead.
No, I was going to say I have T-Mobile, although.
No, but that's not. Okay, so
it's not strong. It wasn't strong enough.
It's not super fast. It's 2G, but it is unlimited free, and it's unlimited international texting, which is nice because that could cost.
It's the best for that.
Yeah. So
but
I am.
Sure you turn your phone. Actually, you're on the river cruise. I was thinking you're on the ocean cruise. Ocean cruises, you have to turn the phone off.
Oh, it'll kill the battery as it seeks.
Not kill the battery. You'll roam even if you're on T-Mobile.
My advice for anybody is, as soon as you go overseas, turn off international data roaming. Data roaming can kill you.
Yeah. Bills. Airplane mode.
Yep. Or you know what? You don't even have to do that. Just turn off data roaming. It won't roam.
Okay.
Simple enough. Johnny Jett, two great picks. We'll record 360 for the iPhone. We'll make a legal document of the condition of your rental car, so they can't
or your house or your
Airbnb.
Yeah.
And then if you want to keep track of where your ship is, live marine traffic. Is it marinetraffic.com?
Just marinetraffic.com.
Love it.
Yep.
Thank you, Johnny Jett, world traveler.
Hey, thank you.
Are you going to be home next week? Of course not.
No, actually, I leave in a couple days. And my wife comes in tonight, and then we leave, I think, tomorrow or the next day.
Oh, man. Be good to be related to Johnny Jett. That's a friend with benefits. Holy cow.
Oh, man. We've been to 55 countries together.
I'd ask you where you're going, but Johnny will never say. He likes to surprise me.
I can't tell you. Like, although, where I'm going this week, I will be somewhere different by the time I call in next week.
Oh.
If that makes any sense.
Yes, no, because the word peripatetic, you look it up in the dictionary, there's Johnny's picture. He is the peripatetic. That means he's in ceaseless motion. Johnny Jett. JohnnyJett.com if you want to follow him on Instagram or Twitter. He's also at Johnny Jett. Worth following him on Instagram. I love your Instagram pictures. It's a great way to keep up.
Well,
and I guess
you.
On Periscope, too, if you're somewhere with bandwidth.
I'm going to do some periscoping.
Thank you, Johnny Jett. Leo Laporte, do you take guy more calls right after this? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number, 888-827-5536. Patrick is in Sullivan, Illinois. Hi, Patrick. Leo Laporte here.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Great, actually.
Good. What can I do for you?
So, I have worked out a deal with my mother where I will be receiving a new camera for my birthday.
Nice.
But there's a catch. Instead of unwrapping a big present on Christmas, I'll be taking pictures of everyone else.
Oh, sounds like mom's a good negotiator.
Yeah.
what kind of camera? Movie or still?
I was looking at what I've decided I feel like is I've looked at reviews and whatever is the Canon Rebel T6S.
Excellent choice.
Because I think that it'd be more worth it to buy the newest because they replaced that old sensor and...
Absolutely. And the Rebels are their entry-level interchangeable lens cameras. They're quite good. Like them a lot. So the T6S is brand new. So that's a still camera. But of course, as with all still cameras, it will take video. Quite good video, actually.
Yeah.
What's your interest? Are you interested in photography? What are you interested in?
More photography than videography, but I'm a car enthusiast, so...
You got some expensive hobbies there, young man.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, it's a good thing mom's a good negotiator. She'd be in trouble. I wish you were in Petaluma today. It's American Graffiti Day. What kind of cars do you like?
A lot of newer imports. Mm-hmm. I like everything.
And you like to take beautiful pictures of them gleaming. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. I think that's a great choice.
I like the servo autofocus. So if a car is like flying around a racetrack, I can get a picture.
Good. Yeah. Canon's very good. In fact, you see a lot of Canon at sporting events, although Nikon's known for its fast autofocus. But Canon's fine. I mean, this is a very high-end camera. You're talking a $1,000 camera here.
Yeah, which is why...
My mom wants to hold me up for ransom.
That's the only big present I'm getting.
This is a great gift. If mom's willing to go this far to support your photography, more power to her and more power to you. This is a big gift, and you're going to spend a lot of energy learning how to use it right, aren't you?
Yeah.
Good man.
With accessories, I'm thinking, I'm looking around on Amazon. They have, like, there's some accessory kit, which I know what comes with it isn't.
Don't go too, save some money. Don't go wild on accessories.
Well, it's one of those, it's like $200, and it's got a tripod bag, camera bag, a fisheye attachment.
Well, that's not bad for $200.
Flash gun, like all the.
So here's the thing. Camera bag, you could throw it in any old bag. I don't know what makes a camera bag special or expensive, except it's got dividers. Tripod's nice to have. And you should price some tripods, because you can get cheap tripods. The heavier tripods are less expensive. A light carbon fiber tripod could be hundreds of bucks by itself.
Yeah.
The fisheye lens isn't going to be great quality, but... a lot of young people your age use fisheyes for things like skateboard videos, things like that, because you can get real close. Yeah, they're great for that. I got my son a fisheye for that very reason when he was your age.
All the accessories in the kit are for 58 millimeter, and the 18 to 135 lens that come with it are 67. So,
well, then you don't want. Here's what you shouldn't get: filters. A lot of times they'll sell you, it's an upsell, they'll sell you a filter, a haze filter to, quote, protect the lens. Don't waste your money. You don't need a filter. And that will be they have to be the size of the lens, but you don't need that. The tripod will work fine. That's a standard, that threaded screw.
The fisheye is also 58
millimeters. The fisheye will not work.
But
it has to screw into the lens, and your lens has to be that size.
But I was looking, there's like... It's $6 or something for a step-down ring.
Aye, aye, aye. It's getting... But the quality's going to... I would look for an accessory kit that goes for this camera.
It's not. It's because I've noticed that the standard seems to be 58 for a lot of lens.
It depends on the lens. Every lens it tends to be different. So they've made this kit for some specific kit.
It's different models.
I'd shop around it before you don't get that yet. You might want to just go to a camera store, pick up the stuff you need as you need it.
Yeah, but I would like to be able to, like, okay, I have this, I'm gonna go try it out, get a feel for why.
Get the camera, get the lens, that's all you need. Comes with a strap. You don't need a filter. You don't need the fisheye. In fact, it's better not to get the fisheye yet. This gets fairly wide at 18. That's good enough. And then tripod, I wouldn't even bother with that yet. These are all things that, you know, get the simpler thing first and master that. And then you can try some other stuff. You're starting with a very high-end camera. I'd stop and get that and learn to use that like a pro, like a champ. And then you'll know whether you need a tripod. Tripods are not useful for, let's say, pictures of cars racing by.
Well, yeah.
You may want a monopod, which would be much more useful for that.
Or taking videos, I know.
Same thing. Because it's hard to pan on a tripod. A tripod is a fixed shot. You know who uses a tripod? Landscape photographers.
Yeah.
Portrait photographers. That's unless you're going to do that, and you don't know yet.
So yeah, I don't. I'm leaning more towards cars, but...
Yeah, save your money till you know what you're going to do with it.
Okay.
All right? Save your mom's money, I should say. She's spending a lot of money on you. That's good enough. Learn how to use this camera.
She's buying the camera, and she's buying that camera.
Good. Save your money for lenses and stuff you really want, but don't buy stuff. What can happen is you overbuy.
Yeah,
you don't need any of that stuff yet. You can use, in fact, it's better not to use a camera bag because it looks like a camera bag. Guess what happens to camera bags? They get stolen.
Yeah.
So you're better off not getting a camera bag. Just, you must have a backpack or something you could put it in.
I've got a...
Yeah.
Backpack.
Yeah. You know, this, my strong advice, you're spending enough money on this camera. It's a great camera. Learn how to use it. If you want to spend money, buy an extra a memory card. It doesn't come with a memory card, you know.
Those kits come with them, too, which is why I'm like...
But they'll be junky memory cards. Those kits are really a ripoff, basically. They make a money on the kits. And they know they're going to get you because you go to the store... Or you go on Amazon and you, well, I got to have a kit. And that's $50 worth of stuff in a $200 bag. Save the money until you've done it. And then you'll know what you need.
So basically, I should just get the camera and then go from there.
Yeah, and save that extra $200. You will find something you really want. Like, there's going to be a lens that you have to have. save up for that. That's much more valuable. You don't need any of the other stuff. The camera kits, as iBuckery in the chat room is saying, it's the equivalent of mud flaps and an underbody coating at a dealer when you buy a car. You'll know better what we're talking about in a few years. You don't need it. You don't need it.
It just makes it look better.
Yeah, exactly. Not even that. It's just, they got you. You got your checkbook open. Might as well get you for everything. Hey, have fun. Upload some pictures to our photo competition we do with Chris Marquardt, will you? I love it. I it's great to hear from you, Patrick. Good luck and have a great photographic career. Who knows? You start now, you could be making a living doing photography. In college, you put yourself through college. Plus, you'll have great memories. I wish I had pictures. You know, there was a kind of a period of time between film and digital, where digital wasn't very good, and I just didn't want to spend the money on film. I wish I had pictures from those years when my kids were young. But now you're going to have them all, Patrick. 8888 Ask Leo. More of your calls coming up in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Website is techguylabs.com. If you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you need some help, some hand-holding on the information superhighway, here I am. Ken is in the Dominican Republic, our next caller. Hi, Ken.
Hi, how are you, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I had a question. This country, where we get internet from, they lock down their routers and their modems. I have just the one that's both router and modem, so I can't make any of the changes to make my internet phone work better, like turning on or off the SIP, whatever way it's supposed to go. I have no ability to change any of that stuff, and they won't change it on their end. And I wasn't sure if there was some like back doorway or something like that you might be able to make changes.
So you have to get your internet from a government-run...
They're not government-run, but I think what it is, but it sounds like it's government-run by them not allowing us to make any changes.
You don't have any choice. In other words, you don't have any choice.
I have a couple of different companies I can go to, but they all do the same thing. And I think the reason they do that is because their technicians aren't trained that well down here. And I think just to keep
everything... So when you say lockdown, what is exactly that they do?
When I go into the router, the only thing I can change is the name of the Wi-Fi and the password.
You can't turn on encryption, for instance.
No, can't do. Can't.
That's shocking.
You can do.
That's shocking. You should be able to turn on WPA encryption at least on a Wi-Fi router.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry.
That's just the wired.
You can change the security of the Wi-Fi.
Oh, good.
You can change the password, and you can change the name of it.
Well,
and
so what do you want to do?
Well, every once in a while, my internet phone just loses a signal and I'm not sure why, and the company that I get it from thinks that maybe the SIP is turned on or turned off, whatever I'm supposed to. One of the SIP is either supposed to be on or off, and I'm not exactly sure.
So
what
you
the,
want
to click
they're button. Telling what they're telling you is that I believe is that you want something called QoS, which prioritizes internet telephony over all other data. That way you have better phone calls. You're using an internet telephone, in other words.
Yes.
Yes. When you say to your router, although I don't normally see that in routers, but I presume there are settings in routers that say, "Hey, I'm using a SIP phone." But what you really want is QoS, quality of service, and what that lets you do is specify that certain services have priority. There are routers that are so-called gaming routers that do that. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly. So you have to use the router that comes with the cable modem or the DSL modem.
Yes. Yeah. Well, because it's one. It's all in one. And they won't let me bridge it either. I tried that.
That was the next question. You can't disable their routing. You can't bridge it.
No, because I have a router that I could use, but I can't put it in bridge mode either.
So you're stuck. You have to use this router. I don't think, frankly, that should make any difference. I mean, it's not... It's, you know, so I remember in the old days of Vonage, they wanted you to put the Vonage phone directly on the internet and then have the router after it. They had their little box that you would put.
That's who my company, that's the, well, I guess they, Vonage sold out to, Volkossi sold to Vonage, so now I'm with Vonage.
I see. Okay. So, and that was for QoS purposes. If their phone interface was directly on the internet, they could improve the quality than if it sat on the other side of the router. But it sounds like they want you to port forward to their phone or something like that. Yeah, I don't know of any secret way to do it, although I'd be willing to bet, and I would Google this, Google it, go to the library and Google it. I would bet there's somebody in the Dominican who has figured out a way around, you know, the limitations of that router, for instance.
Well, that was the next thing I was going to do, because I figured the major companies have to be able to make changes. I was going to go in and see if I could.
Sure.
Their IT guys at a big company.
Yeah, somebody's figured out how to get into that router in a more detailed way. What you could do, and what you'd like to do, for instance, maybe, is DMZ the IP address for the phone. That way, by putting it in a DMZ, it means don't do any routing. Just traffic to the phone is direct. That would help with a SIP phone, for instance. I don't know off the top of my head. Pardon me?
That's done in the router, the DMZ?
Yes. That's okay. One of the settings you can't get to. You know, there may be a SIP setting, I don't know. Even if there's not, there are other settings that would give you kind of the same thing. I think, the truth is, there's not much you're going to be able to do, even if you got full access to the router, to improve that phone quality. Even if you were able to give it QoS or bypass the router with a DMZ, I don't think that's probably the big issue. Okay. So what the phone company's telling, what Vonage is telling you is, we want your phone to be as close to the bare internet as we can get it. Yeah, but again, I don't know. Who makes the router?
The router is Zyxel. It's a Chinese company.
Zyxel is very popular, very common. You know what? Go Google it. Somebody will have figured out a way to hack that for sure. You know, Google Dominican Zycel hack and see what you can find. Almost for sure. And then what you're going to look to do is, you know, if there's a SIP setting in there, there may or may not be. Obviously, that would be the first one. Zycel is a very common router brand. They're one of the best old modem brands, going way, way back. What you want is the admin account, and you've been given the guest account, basically. And so you want to, what you're looking for, and I'm sure you could Google, is how do I get admin access to this Zycel router? I would be shocked if that's not on the internet. That's the kind of thing the internet was made for. And you should be aware you may be violating your terms of service, blah, blah, blah. Steve in Aliso Viejo, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Steve.
How you doing? Thank you very much for taking my phone call.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I have a problem I need some help with. I've been tangled with my daughter's her Apple ID account.
Oi.
For seems like years.
Oi.
Now she's a teenager.
Yep. I did the same thing with my kids, because when they were kids, you know, I want them to use my Apple ID.
Right.
But now they're grown up, and I don't want to hear no more rap in my music.
I'm having a difficult time, like, conceptualizing how I'm going to sort this all out.
Well, fortunately, Apple's made this a little easier than it used to be. So, first of all, of course, this is what I did with my son and my daughter. I said, kids, you're grown up now. One will be 21 in August, one is 23. I said, you're grown ups now. Good news, it's time to have your own Apple ID. So that's the first thing you do, create an Apple ID for your daughter.
She has one.
Good, all right. Now you want to add her, because she wants to listen to all the music she bought on your ID, right?
Actually, we bought it on her ID.
Oh, well, other way around then.
Right.
Oh, I see. Well, whatever ID, she needs one that's separate from your ID. Okay, so it's on her ID. Now what you want to do is use family sharing. And this is something Apple just added in iOS 8, and it's great. Because she can, she'll have to log into her account, add your Apple account. You need one separate one. Add your Apple account and share music with you, which means you'll be able to listen to her music, TV shows, movies, anything she owns, as if it was yours. And it solves that whole conundrum. And from now on, she buys on her account, you buy on your account.
That seems pretty straightforward.
It's actually very straightforward. And it's only an issue, by the way, with copy-protected music. Anything that's not copy-protected, just take a copy of it. It still has her Apple. You should know her Apple ID is embedded in the song. That's how Apple prevents piracy. So don't give it to your friends and family. But if you're just using it for yourself, no problem. So family sharing for copy-protected stuff, which absolutely includes TV and movies still. Music, most of it now is, none of it's sold with copy protection and hasn't been for years. The rest of it, you could use iTunes Match and convert it. But family sharing solves the whole problem. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's a devil of a time, as you may remember, getting my son to create an Apple ID for himself. We were going through my iTunes collection, all my daughter's music here. There you go. You know what? That's great. The Aquabats get a little royalty. Everybody's happy. Howard, Pasadena, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Howard.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. I have an interesting issue. Yesterday morning, I woke up, went to Google, and it was showing Google Korea.
Oh, no.
Never been to Korea. Don't speak Korean.
Google.kr.
Exactly right.
Yeah. So for some reason, your browser or your computer decided that you were in Korea.
Yes.
I'm not sure why, but it's easy to fix.
I called Apple support, and they said they get about 8 or 9 calls a day.
Well,
for the same problem, and led me to a Google site.
Yeah, yeah,
I filled out the information, and they said that would be about a month or so.
What?
Yep.
That's not helpful at all.
Exactly.
So here's the deal. You can go there. Anybody wants to see what you're seeing, go to google.kr. But if you don't want to be on google.kr, you can click the far right. Let me see if it's in here. The far right, I know it's in Korean, it's in Hangul, so you don't understand it. But if you click the far right one, I think you can, yeah. The far right one is a setting, search settings, and you can click location. And you could say where you are and save it. And that's it. You don't have to wait months.
I've done that.
And it goes back to .kr?
Absolutely. So Google said go to google.com. I think it's NCR, which brings me to the American Google like I always had.
Yeah.
But on the next search, it goes right back to Korea. I've also changed the language and settings as well.
You went to your system preference pane, and you made sure that it says you're in the U.S., right?
Correct.
That's where Apple could help you because there is obviously some location information. It's under language and region, I think. Is right. That it? Let me see here. Wait a minute. No. There's another one. My Mac, I have it set to determine where I am all by itself. I suspect that's the default, and I'm sure that's what's going on. For some reason, it's decided that you're not where you are. I don't know why. Perhaps it's, I don't know. It's an interesting.
Yeah, interesting and Apple question. Said it was a Google problem. After they had me try what you just indicated.
Okay, so they verified that your machine thinks you are in the U.S.
Correct.
And so that's, you know, yeah, that's interesting, huh? It's an interesting, and they say it'll take months.
Well, they said you fill out a form online, you give them your IP number. And it comes back with a response saying it could take up to a month. We're working on it.
Yeah, what they're saying is your address, your internet address, which, by the way, will probably change once in a while. Who's your internet service provider?
Charter.
For some reason, your internet address is associated with Korea.
That's right.
Yes. I mean, you might ask Charter. Maybe they know because maybe, I don't know, maybe it was moved. Let's see. I'm going to look under date and time. That's another, that's part of the time zone calculation. And
yeah, I asked Charter and they told me to go to Apple.
Yeah. So go into your in-system preferences, go into date and time. And you might look there, make sure that it's pointing to the right locale. You can, you know, you can check set time zone automatically using current location, but you can also say, hey, I'm in Korea, and it'll believe you. So perhaps that's what went wrong. Maybe at some point this got set. So I would look, I'm surprised Apple didn't suggest this, but I would look under the date and time system preference pane, make sure it's pointing to the right spot.
Yeah, they actually did suggest that, and I made
you
sure
fixed
it
that.
Was.
All right,
that's why I'm calling you.
Yeah, the tech guy should know that. Let's see.
That's exactly right.
I would guess that Charter, for some reason, is using an IP address range from Korea. I mean, no, IP addresses don't have location information stored in them. It's just historical. So, at some point, the IP address perhaps that you're using was coming from Korea, and Google has decided that this must you must be in Korea. That's very odd. You can go. Mike B is telling me there's a website, whereisip.net.
Okay.
Try that, because that what's happening is something is identifying to Google that it's in Korea, and you want to figure out what it is. I guess you could tell. It seems like this is the least useful thing would be to tell Google, well, whenever you see, and that's not right. Whereisip.net, is that right? It's not at .com. Yeah, whereisip.net.
Okay.
And it should put a dot down where you are. If it does, then going to Google and saying, well, my IP address is not here, you know, it won't do any good because... So go to where... Are you in front of a computer right now?
I'm sorry, I'm not. I'm actually driving.
Try... Yeah, well, don't... Okay, keep your hands on the wheel.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll put this in the show notes. Where is IP.net? On mine, it says exactly... Well, it says I'm in Palo Alto, but that's close enough. That's where my internet service provider's servers are probably located. But it's in California anyway. There's another one, iplocation.net. If it says Korea, then yeah, you're going to have to contact Google and say, hey, just so you know, when I come in from this internet address, I'm not in Korea. You might also go to Charter. They said call Apple, huh? Well, that's because the natural thing would be to say, oh, your computer's misconfigured. But it's not. Apple's verified that it's not.
Right.
So it's something about that IP address. Interesting. You're not using a proxy server or anything like that?
I am not.
VPN. No. Yeah, you know, sometimes the internet gets miswired. I've never heard of this. It's a fascinating issue. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen, you know, misreported locations when I travel. Or when I'm on an airplane. For instance, when you're on an airplane, Google may think you're in Florida when you're in Iowa because that's where Go-Go, you know, Boing Boing or Go-Go or whoever it is, Boingo Internet, gets its service. That I've seen happen. You might try, Roger's suggesting, and it's probably something you should do anyway, reboot the router. In fact, turn all your machines off, unplug your router.
Okay.
And then... plug your router in and then turn on your machine. See if that could be the router is misreporting. And somebody's saying malware. I don't know if it's malware. It doesn't seem quite right. Oh, here's another one. Sign into your Google account on another computer, on another, you know, go to the library or somewhere. Maybe your Google account has decided you're in Korea as opposed to via your IP address.
Okay.
Another choice. So there's about 18 different things you can try. Let me know. Would you email Leo at techguylabs.com? I'm curious what's going on here. We do have to take a break. We'll be back with more. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, take it to Starbucks. That's a good idea. If it's a laptop computer, take it somewhere. Get on somebody else's internet, see what happens. If everything's normal, then it's your router or your ISP. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 ask. Leo. Really interesting conversation in the chat room and looking online, too, with this idea that Google suddenly decides you're in another country. And, you know, the first thing I would do, though, is make sure that no one's using your Google account. If you go to gmail.com, go down to the bottom, or I think on your Google dashboard, google.com/dashboard, it'll show you the most recent logins. And one concern would be if one of them was from Korea, actually. You know, make sure nobody from Korea is actually logging into your account, in other words. That would be an issue. But there's so many other things that could cause this. And in fact, it's not unique. It's not even that rare. But right down at the bottom of Gmail, go to gmail.com, and even if you don't use Gmail, there'll still be something at the bottom right says details. You can see where people are logging in from. And that could be of use. Remember, it could be an agent that you've authorized, a software or something that you've authorized. I see somebody logging in from Oregon, but that's not me. That's some app that I have. But if you see Korea, you see a lot of them, you might want to change your password. How about that? Garrett, Miami, Florida. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well, Garrett. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Yay.
I've got one of the most interesting questions of my life for you.
Good, because this has been a good day for interesting questions.
I've been approached to do some live streaming for basic training graduation.
Ah, cool.
And what we're looking for is a wireless solution that would allow us to like create a wireless network at the venue so that we can have multiple cameras feeding into one area to one computer solution. And I've looked at Teradek encoders and transmitters, and I wanted to know what your input on those.
I like them. So there's a couple of companies that do this. We use another company, competing company from Israel called LiveU, LIVE, the letter U. But they work very much like Teradek. In both cases, they will either bond together 3G and 4G cell networks for data, or they'll use Ethernet. I guess they could even use Wi-Fi. You'd prefer that they weren't all on the same network, because it's a lot of bandwidth to stream video, especially to stream it reliably. And if you're having more than, say, one or two cameras, it can really, you got to work hard. But Teradek does it. So the Teradek device takes the camera video and encodes it in the hardware on the device, and then uses bonded 4G networks to send it out. And it works quite well.
Okay. So would that solution be able to use like a local wireless connection, and then...
You're going to saturate it really quickly if you have more than one camera on it. Unless your Wi-Fi is extraordinarily high bandwidth. Remember, if you're sending HD signals out of these cameras, each of them is going to take 10, 20 megabits. And, boy, that doesn't take long before you've filled up all the capacity of the network.
No, not at all. Okay, well, then maybe I need to find a better solution, because what we want to do...
Wired is going to work much better for you. I wish my buddy Alex Lindsay were here. He's an expert on this kind of thing. He does exactly what you're just talking about, streaming live events. I think wireless is going to be tough.
Okay.
Because the video is you know, high bandwidth, unless you don't care how good the quality is, but I think you do.
So, yeah, we wanted to keep it on one network and then use one bonded connection to like Ustream or YouTube, so we're not using like 15 or 16 different Verizon cards and racking up a couple.
It does get very it gets very expensive very fast. There's no way you could do it wired?
Oh no, we could do it wired.
It's so in every respect. If you could do it, wireless, it's going to be tough. You're going to saturate that network very fast. But you do it wired, you can have high speed. And much better quality, much more reliability, much less latency. Remember, you got to switch those cameras too. All of it's going to be a lot easier if it's all wired.
Okay, what would be a wired solution that you?
There's lots of them. We use SDI, serial digital interface. So we take the cameras. Most of them have HDMI out because we use cheap consumer grade camcorders. We use a Blackmagic HDMI to SDI converter, and SDI can go hundreds of feet. So you can, and it looks like thin black coax. So you could easily run that. I mean, the cameras aren't going to be more than 100, 200 feet apart, I'm sure. You can easily run each from each of them a thin black coax cable back to your switching solution. That's what we do. That's what I would do if I were going to, if I were in your shoes, I wanted to stream a graduation ceremony. That's exactly what I'd do.
Okay.
All right. Have
fun. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for doing what you're doing. Sounds like it's a big deal. You just can't, you know, wireless has limited capacity and video is demanding. It takes a lot of data. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I've got a minute left. I don't know. Can we do it? Let's see. Let's go to Bellflower, California. Lamarty on the line. Hi, Lamarty.
Leo, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. I'm still kind of a novice when it comes to these smartphones. But
yeah.
I've been working with an S3 that I got a decent deal on a year and a half ago. But it blew, the charging point blew out of me, and I need to replace it. I need some advice. I'm thinking about stepping up to either an S6 or a Note 4.
They're very similar. They came out a few months apart. The big difference is screen size. S6 is 5.1 inches. That's what I use. I love it. The Note 4 is 5.5 inches. Much better screen size. And, by the way, removable battery and SD card. But otherwise, they're very, very similar. So, really, base it, I think, on screen size. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Take me down to Paradise City, or as it's known around here, Gizneyland. Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer, is here. He's the Gizwiz, comes on every week and brings crazy gadgets. Hello, Dickie D.
How are you, pal?
Mad Magazine's maddest writer.
Yes.
I am well.
Yes.
How are you? How's Gizneyland?
You're Twit's weirdest host.
Host.
Right?
Weirdest owner.
Yeah. Weirdest owner. There you go. Weirdest owner.
There's just one of me.
One of you. Okay. Yeah. I saw a couple things from the hardware show that
I was at last week
in Vegas. One you might be interested in called the Up Cart.
Up Cart.
The all-terrain stair-climbing cart.
Hmm.
Okay, so it has three wheels on each axle. And as you approach a step and start to pull it, the wheels rotate up onto the first step. And then as you hit the next step, a wheel catches it and rotates.
Oh, please. Really?
Yes.
This sounds like more work.
No.
Did you try it going up? Do they have steps at the hardware show?
They did have steps. Actually, I wanted to video it, so I had the guy who invented it pulling up some steps. And it looked really neat. And it folds flat, folds down to about 4 inches, has a weight capacity of 100 pounds, rubber tires, ball bearing axle. So I think he's going to do well with it.
This is for people like you who live in New York City and go shopping and then drag the shopping cart up the stairs.
You know, like I'm going to tell the guy who lives on the fifth floor about this because I think he'll be thrilled.
He's in a walk-up? There's no elevator?
No.
Oh,
five-floor walk-up is the limit in New York City.
Yeah, that's the limit, all right.
Yeah, but I believe the building next door legally or illegally added the sixth floor, so that's a lot of walking up.
Well, they put a trampoline on the fifth floor, so you don't have to. It's not.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
It's not literally walking five floors. You just.
And then the
up.
Other thing is from Night Eyes. You know, Night Eyes makes flashlights and bungees. They make clever little gadgets, and they make a skeleton key that has a skeleton picture on it, but it's actually like a mini little tool key. Yeah, it has a little rough edge, and for laughs. I had a clam package, one of those plastic packages.
Oh, I hate those. You cannot open those.
I was able to cut right through it with the edge of the key. Right, the other edge has a little nail file. The tip of it is a screwdriver. And then the body of it is a bottle opener.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really clever, and it's all.
And
stainless.
Would that get by? Do you think would that get
you
by
what,
Homeland Security?
Them, and it said that it is TSA
approved.
Safe approved, exactly.
What could possibly go wrong? The thing's got a skull on it.
Exactly. Jeez. Well, they also make one without a skull. In case you think you don't want to carry a skull.
Attract
with you.
Attention.
Yeah. it's $9, and I looked before the show, and on Amazon, it's $6, and Amazon Prime. So
I like it just for opening the blister packs. Those things drive me nuts.
Yeah.
And if
crazy.
I had something on.
They should. Yes, they should make them illegal.
I try to open them with keys, so it actually makes sense. I'd have one key on the chain that actually has a blisteringly sharp point. What about carrying that in your pocket? Might cut a hole through your pocket.
You know what? I think the way that it's designed, that the saw is up in the opening there. I don't think you're going to have a problem.
This is actually called the doohickey?
Yes.
Has no
the doohickey.
Oh, I get it. Doohickey.
Hickey.
No one has ever used doohickey for the name of their doohickey.
Well,
this is the first. All this time we've been calling weird gadgets doohickeys, and finally somebody said, "You know, I really ought to name my gadget."
Said, wait, no one's got that.
It is a doohickey.
Someone probably went online and said, "Wait, no one's got it.
It's available." Who'd have thunk it? Wow. Dick is at gizwiz.biz. That's his website where you can see details about these products and all the products he mentions, not only on this show, but on his appearances on ABC's World News Now and elsewhere. And you can also find out about his podcast, which is called The Gizwiz. And if you go to gizwiz, gizwiz.tv, you can find out all about it. And Dick's doing something very modern.
Yes.
He's crowdfunding this. So if you click the link that says Patreon, you'll see that Dick and his co-host, Chad Johnson, are putting the Gizwiz out on the internet. And it's free. You can always get it for free. But if you want to become a patron for $1 an episode, you can be one of the few, the proud, the Gizwiz patrons. You got 346 so far. More to come, I'm sure.
Yeah, good. That's great.
Gizwiz.tv. And at least watch the show. But, you know, once you watch, actually, you know what, give money before you watch it, just to be on the safe side.
Yeah, I know. There's always like 1,000 people who subscribe, and then they watch it. And then right after the show, it goes down to 400.
Yeah. No, it's great. I watch it every week. I love it. Thank you, Dickie D. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, sir.
I think this is going to be the last call of the day. Carrie's on the line from Lancaster, California. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome.
Thank you. Hey, I got an old school question for you here. I'm on a very limited income, and I have a TV antenna, but I need to find a very reasonably priced digital converter box. Oh,
you know, this all started because the FCC some years ago said to local television stations, you got to go from analog to digital to free up the analog bandwidth. And for the first few years, the government would have given you a free one.
Well, I know, but back then I actually had money. Now I don't.
Isn't that ironic? You could have gotten it for free, but you didn't need it then, and now you need it, and you can't get it for free anymore.
So the FCC isn't giving them out for free anymore?
I'll have to check, but I don't. I think that was a limited-time deal. They ought to have given away forever because when they did this, they basically broke all the TVs. Your TV, if it's not a new, later model TV, can only handle an analog signal. So you need a box between.
Well, not as old as me, but close.
And I presume you don't want to get a new TV.
I'm sorry, say again?
You don't want to get a new TV.
Very limited income. Yeah. So I'd love a new one, however come.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that would fix it because those understand the digital signal. I don't think the government program is still going. I'll have to check. There are places to buy these. They're really not expensive. Well, when you're on a limited income, everything's expensive. $40-$50, thereabouts.
Okay. Walmart
has a $30 converter. And so what it'll do is it'll take the digital signal from your antenna. You might not need to get a new antenna if it's a good antenna. And it's for $30. This is the Ematic AT-103B. And it actually has recording capabilities. You might even be able to get it cheaper than that, because that's ads expense too. So yeah, I think if you go to Walmart, they'll have some choices for you. Allows your TV without a digital tuner, that's your TV, to receive the newer digital broadcasts. $30 is not too bad.
Okay.
That's what I would do, and that should work. You could probably go online and shop around. Too bad that government program didn't last. They made so much money from the sale of that, you know, the auction. They made billions of dollars. Verizon, I think, bought it all for billions
of
dollars.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it would all be a non-issue if I could, you know, get my Wi-Fi to work.
Yep. Then you just stick with the internet. That's a call for another day, though. We're out of time. Hey, thank you. I hope that helps, Carrie. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.